It's time for The Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's The Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston. Maybe you're listening in Boston on FM 100.3, or maybe you're listening on the app. Who knows where you're listening, but you could be listening just about anywhere. And worldwide, in fact, it's kind of interesting. I look at the places where people download the program, the podcast program, which is, you can find that just about anywhere. But my podcast site is johnfpaul.podomatic.com. And we have people that download the program in Australia. We have people that download the program in Ireland. And I'm guessing the people that download the program in Ireland only download it because they want to listen to the with Paul Sullivan and I chit-chatting back and forth. So we listen to people listen all over the place, and I thank them all the time for it. We'll be talking about a car that got me around the last couple weeks, and that's the Toyota Yaris. We'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about some of the things that were in the news today, including, I don't know if you noticed, but the CEO of Nissan, he's in some trouble. Apparently absconded with millions of, well, he didn't abscond. I guess he's, there's like $40 million that they can't seem to find somewhere or something like that. So who knows? Who knows what's going on? Also, I want to talk about the extra money you pay when you buy a certified pre-owned car. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. And also some cars that maybe did or didn't do that well, and some cars that, you know, looking at cars that made a comeback. It was an interesting article in Automotive News about, sort of how the Dodge Challenger's done pretty well, but how some other cars have kind of gone away. Problem?
So the guest that you wanted to have on,
yes,
when you said you were kind of worried about the phone,
yep,
number, you were legit. You had some legit things. So when I call it, it says, thank you for calling the car rack. Our normal office hours are Monday through Friday, whatever time,
yeah,
they say. Please call back then. Click.
And you can't dial through the extension?
I tried to dial through the extension. Anytime I hit a button, it just hangs up.
Huh. That's interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well. Huh. Well, I don't know what to say.
I'll try. I'll keep
trying. Yeah, keep trying. Keep trying. See if there's... maybe try the number with the extension at the end instead of using the...
Yeah.
Yeah, try that. Direct dials into that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what we do.
Yeah, yeah. All right, good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
So we were going to be talking to Woody Rogers from Tire Rack just to learn a little bit more about snow tires and all-season tires and things like that, but we're having a little trouble getting a hold of them. What I was talking about earlier was an article in Automotive News that says, while the novelty wears off for most retro-style cars, Challenger powers on. Everything old may be new again, but eventually everything that's new again grows old, except perhaps a Dodge Challenger. The Challenger is an odds-defying, high-horsepower retro car that with sales muscle, and it kind of goes over some of the cars that didn't do that well. It's funny, I owned two of them. The Volkswagen Beetle, which this is the last year coming up, a modern take on the classic air-cooled bug. Production is scheduled to end next year. They sold almost 750,000 of them. The Chrysler PT Cruiser had one of those too. 1930s panel delivery truck sort of looks. They sold a little over 1 million of those. That was a vehicle that in both cases, the Beetle we have and the PT Cruiser we had were both convertibles. And I remember when Chrysler was not doing particularly well, and they really had nothing to show at the New York Auto Show, and they dragged out the PT Cruiser convertible. They made a convertible out of it and kind of went from there. So no dice, huh?
Well, I listened to the message a little bit more, and it says they open at 9.
Ah,
I can call then if you'd like.
Okay, then. Okay, then their phones are they still don't have a, you know, if you know the party's extension, press 9 and then
no, they just closed. Call back later.
Call back later, huh? Well then, well, we'll do the best we can. I asked for another phone number for them just in case, but I don't know. The Fiat 500 was another one, 2010 to present, the modern take on the beloved post-war Italian mini car. They've sold about 189,000 of those. The Prowler, both as a Plymouth and a Chrysler, it's a 1930-style hot rod. They sold about 10,000 of those, and that was kind of an interesting car. It had no trunk in it whatsoever. It had a little thing you could open up. I think you could put a sweatshirt in the back of it. It was fun to drive, but it never really sold because it was a V6. And even though it was fast enough to be a hot rod, and it sounded pretty good.
And it looked cool.
And it looked cool. It's just people wanted a V8. In fact, that was sort of the one of the hot things that people did with it. They actually put a V8 engine. They squished a V8 engine under the hood. But people did superchargers with the V6. And again, even the stock V6 engine was pretty good. But just didn't make it. Ford Thunderbird, they actually came out with that in 2001 to 2005. And they called it a modern version of the 1955 to 57 T-Bird two-seater. They sold about 64,000 of those. I really like that car a lot. I think that's still a really good value. If you're looking for something that looks kind of interesting, does well, I think it's just a really, really good car. BMW Z8 was a car they built from 2003. It was supposed to be kind of a late 50s BMW 507, and that was a car that they only sold about 2,300 of them. I got the opportunity to drive that car. That car was really nice. Ford Mustang, they'll keep making those forever. Chevrolet SSR, they made for a few years. Didn't really sell that well. And then, of course, the Mini Cooper, and then the Fiat 124 Spider, which is sort of a Mazda-ish kind of vehicle. And then the Chevrolet HHR, which they made for about 6 years, was supposed to be like a Chevrolet Suburban, only a third the size. And that was kind of an interesting take on that, too. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. Let's talk to Paul in Braintree. Paul?
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
I did okay. Ate too much, you know, usual with most people, you know.
Everybody did this.
Yeah.
Yeah, the actually tying something into your column about catalytic converters, but you mentioned the redesign or the last Ford Thunderbird. Yeah, I see more and more of them around. I guess maybe they're becoming collector. They're really a good price if you in the market to buy one, and they look really great. I guess they have one that even has a porthole window in the back.
Yeah, you can get the hard when you get the hard top for it. You can get the hard top with the porthole window, which is kind of neat.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine who had worked for Ford at the time, and he was an engineer. They spent over a year just designing the dashboard on that thing. So, I mean, they put a lot of detail in it. I don't know why it didn't sell, and I keep wondering whether they'll ever bring back the Thunderbird again.
Mm.
Probably not, but it's a good. The car runs well. I mean, the ones they made in the 2000s are a sturdy automobile. I mean, if one to them, if you're going to make an investment in one, they're a pretty solid car.
Yeah, they're a solid car. That was the same driveline that was used in the Lincoln of the time, the Lincoln LS, the smaller Lincoln, and it was also a very similar chassis to what was used in the Jaguar when Ford owned Jaguar at the time. So it's actually a pretty solid car. Transmission engines held up really well. And even when the car was brand new, as compared to, say, a Jaguar convertible, again, which they shared some of the underpinnings, you could buy 3-4 Thunderbirds for the price of the Jaguar. And, you know, the Jaguar, of course, is a Jaguar, but still.
And it would actually start, unlike a lot of Jaguars.
Yeah. Well, the old Jaguars. You know, that was always the old joke with Jaguars. They had, you know, two of everything that broke twice as often. And they really did. They had, like, two distributors. They had, you know, two sets of camshafts. They had a lot of parts and pieces, and it didn't really help their drivability a lot.
No. You wrote in your column today in the Globe about catalytic converters, which reminded me, I was driving down to Thanksgiving dinner down towards the Cape, and we were behind a car, and all of a sudden the smell of rotten eggs started to fill my car, and I looked, and what is going on? Is something wrong with my car? Then I looked up one car ahead of me, actually two cars ahead of me by that time, and it was a Chrysler product. I'm not sure. It was a white Chrysler convertible of recent vintage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was a Sebring, or that was still a thing. And I've talked about this before, but I have noticed many times when I'm behind a Chrysler product, you get a very strong residue of sulfuric acid coming out of the catalytic converter. I don't know why their products are like that. I had to close the vent, actually, to keep the smell out. But it was a Chrysler in front that caused that. I don't know if it's a defect in the manufacturer of it, but it really stands out. You know, there's a Chrysler in the area because of the smell.
It's kind of interesting. Sometimes some catalytic converters, and I don't know why this is, are very sensitive to fuel mixtures, and sometimes it's just the brand of fuel will make the catalytic converter have that sulfuric acid, rotten egg smell. And I'm not sure why. I've never really heard a good answer. It's just, you know, when gasoline's made, it's a secret sauce of recipes sometimes. And sometimes for cost savings, they mix more elements into it than others. I don't know. But it's one of those things that can kind of trigger what can happen with the catalytic converter. And I've actually seen technical service bulletins from different vehicle manufacturers say if a customer comes in, you know, with a catalytic converter smell, first off, tell them to try changing brands of gasoline from, you know, whatever they're using to, you know, Shell or Mobil or something different to see if it goes away. And maybe Chrysler products are a little bit more fussy about that. Usually what causes a catalytic converter to smell like that is the fuel mixture is too rich. So there's too much fuel going into it. The catalytic converter can't process it. And that's where the problem happens. So
you have to use premium fuel?
No. Sometimes it's just a mix of gas for whatever reason. And I don't understand it, but when somebody writes to me and says, here's the problem with my car. I'm getting this odor. I don't have a check engine light. The car has 25,000 miles on it. First thing I'll say is go change brands of fuel and run a couple of tanks of something different through it, whether it's Shell or Mobil. You know, try to stick with a name brand, Shell, Mobil, Citgo, something like that. That's a name brand, and see if it goes away.
Yeah. Are there any? I see Gulf advertised, but I never see any Gulf gas stations around. Are there still any in the?
Gulf used to be Cumberland Farms. Cumberland Farms owned Gulf. And a couple of years ago, they sold their distributorship for Gulf. And now I believe anything that was Gulf gasoline is just private labeled, delivered, you know, off, you know, sold on the mercantile exchange as just another commodity. And, you know, it's sold to, you know, Stop and Shop and BJ's and things like that. I think you'd be pretty hard pressed if you found something that was a Gulf station, and if they had the Gulf sign out front, if you got to the pump, it'd probably say this really isn't Gulf, because it probably isn't. So
they still have a billboard, I think, at Fenway Park.
Oh yeah, yeah. That, well,
you know, so
yeah.
I mean, the name is still out there.
Yeah, and that's probably because they had a long term advertising commitment or something. So.
No, that's good. Are the Chrysler 300s actually selling? I see a lot of them being used as I see a livery license plate on the back of a lot of them. They're a little retro. They do look a little bit like the mid-50s Chrysler.
Yeah, I actually kind of like the look of them, and I have to admit, when they're in livery trim and they have they have shiny wheels and glossy black paint and maybe even the windows slightly tinted a little bit, they're a pretty good looking car when they're set up that way. But they're a little like the Lincoln Continental. I mean, the only Continentals I've ever seen have livery plates on them.
Exactly. Yeah. But hold up to remember the ones in the when Chrysler products used to be really well designed. Everything from the Plymouth Fury, the Dodges, the Chrysler, and DeSoto. I always heard that they used DeSotos. That used to be a car for people who are much younger than I am. They used to put a lot of new features in and experiment in the DeSotos first before it went to like Chrysler. I'm not sure that's true. I guess DeSoto was sort of like the Mercury of Ford. It was between Ford and Lincoln.
I mean, a little before my time. Didn't I just see something about Dukakis was driving around promoting the T, driving in either a DeSoto or a Packard?
He's probably the original owner too.
But he was just doing it this week, I think. So.
Yeah, I did see a picture of him, but he was. I think he was standing next to former Governor Weld in the picture. But I guess I didn't read beyond that. I wonder what year Packard it was.
I don't know. Looked like in the early 50s.
He had a DeSoto.
Yeah.
But I always thought they were better looking almost cars than they had modified fins. When fins were really big, they were just anyway.
Yeah.
But it was a DeSoto, and then that disappeared. I don't know. The rest of Chrysler disassembled.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway. Well, thank you very
much. All right. Take care, Paul.
The converter.
All right. Take care. Bye bye. Let's go over to Peter. Peter?
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Oh, good. Very good. All right, well, Paul, I was wondering if you, by any chance, had the opportunity to drive one of the new Fiat 124s, the new as of last year or whatever.
I have only driven it for about an hour.
Yeah.
And it was, it was a fun little car. It's a car that they when they designed it, they essentially used a Mazda Miata, and they stretched it out a little bit, and they put their own engine in it. But you know, if you like the Miata, there's no reason you wouldn't like the Fiat.
How does it compare with the old 124?
Well, the old 124 was pretty to look at. And fun to drive, even though it was a little bit underpowered, and it you had trouble keeping it before it rusted away, and so between the rust and drivability issues of any of the early Fiats, you know, whether it was actually a Fiat or they actually private labeled some of them at some point later in life. But those were, I mean, they're, if you look at a Fiat body style from the original Fiat 124, if you had to pick iconic design cars, so if you had to pick a car that you looked at it and you said, you know, that was a good looking car when it came out, and in 50 years it's going to be a good looking car, and 100 years it's going to be a good looking car, the Fiat 124 was definitely one of those cars.
You're right.
You know, and the same, you could say the same thing for, you know, whether it's an early Mercedes SL or whether it's something like even a Volkswagen Beetle, the air-cooled Beetle or a Common Ghia. Those are cars that kind of have an iconic style that kind of stays current, I think, and it has an appeal to it, and that's certainly what that does, so.
Yeah, well, I bet you still enjoy driving a manual once in a while.
Of course, unless I'm stuck in Boston traffic, then I enjoy it a little less.
Well, a good friend of mine in college days had a four-door Fiat 124. That thing was, we took it to New Orleans and all over the place. And that car was surprisingly durable. I thought, all he ever does is change oil in this thing, and he just keeps going. Great. Yeah, it was a good car. I heard that as time has been, they're not making as many manuals anymore. In fact, Audi is going to discontinue. They're not going to even offer a manual next year.
Well, that doesn't really surprise me because
they had the paddle shifters and all.
Because that style transmission does really, really well. I just miss the whole idea of having a clutch pedal. And there's times where I really enjoy driving something with a clutch pedal. And as good as the paddle shifters are on these true manual transmissions that happen to have an automatic clutch, they're really good. And I mean, if you look at a Formula One car, it doesn't have a clutch, it's got paddles. So you know, the argument is they're better than a driver, but on the other hand, there's something fun about getting a perfect shift and taking off just right. That makes driving enjoyable.
I agree completely. That's how I, you know, it's still fun, and that will never go away. The new 124 Fiat, it's quicker than the original one. And how quick is it? I mean, is it really fun to drive?
Oh, I mean, anything this small with the top that goes down that can go to 60 in under 6 seconds is, of course, it's fun to drive. Yeah, a Miata, which is not fast, is still fun to drive.
Yeah. Yeah, do you know how much horsepower the new Miatas have?
No, I don't. But it's not a lot. It's under 200.
Yeah. Well, you know. Well, I know. Would you buy another manual?
Oh yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I would again. Like when we bought my wife's Volkswagen, it was only available in an automatic, so that's what we bought. And being frugal that I'm known for. You know, if I could have saved $1,000 getting a stick shift Beetle, I would have done it.
Right. Sure. Why not? Yeah. You're like me, Ben. I still like manuals. I've always had them. You know.
Yep.
Makes me feel useful.
There you go. Like exactly.
It. Yeah.
All
I
right.
Like to drive it. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Take care, Peter.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
Yep.
Let's go to Howie in Cambridge. Howie.
Yes, I'm right here.
You are right there.
I had a question about changing my battery out without hooking up an outside 12 volts to the terminals.
Okay.
And can I do that on a Nissan 2011 Nissan Frontier with the V6 engine? It does have something, some sort of circuitry hooked up to that positive.
Yeah, but that just powers up other things. What should happen is you'll lose all of your radio presets and things like that. You might not. The only thing you have to worry about is whether that radio has any kind of anti-theft system built into it. And if it does, you want to make sure you have the code to turn the radio back on afterwards. Now, that's kind of gone away in the last few years. We don't see that as much as we used to. Do you still have the owner's manual for the truck?
Oh, I've been through that thing. It doesn't tell you much at all.
Well, then you're probably fine. Because, right. For instance, my last couple cars, I think one of them had it, one of them didn't. We just had the code. I had the code for the radio. When it came up, it said something about anti-theft, and I just put the code in, turned the radio back on, and everything was fine. When I changed the battery in the car I had last year, I didn't do anything. And when I hooked the battery back up, it didn't lose any of the presets. And for some reason or another, there's got to be a capacitor in the system. Even the clock still had the right time. So. I wouldn't be all that concerned about it. I would just, change it. And if you have to reset the clock and you have to reset the radio, you have to reset the clock and reset the radio. What you might find, and not so much in Nissan, but for other cars, sometimes if you have the battery disconnected long enough, the computer in the car will have to relearn a few things. So you start up the car and it might run a little bit rough. and then let it run like that for a minute, shut it off, restart it again. It should straighten itself out. I remember years ago, GM cars would, you disconnect the battery, you put the battery in, and especially if you didn't get to putting the battery in right away, so maybe 15 minutes, half an hour went by, you put the battery back in, you start up the car, it would start up and it would stall. And you go, geez, that's odd. You start it back up and it would run okay. You put it in gear, it would stall. You start it back up, and then it would run okay, and it wouldn't stall. So so there wasn't, you know, it was one of those kind of odd things that it just learned what to do a little bit at a time. And once it did that, you know, it was everything, after that, everything was good. So, but with the Nissan truck, it's pretty straightforward and simple. I'd just go put a battery in it.
Yeah, it says when you start the car, you should put it in the on position, and when the brake, I think it's the passenger safety, goes off in about 5 seconds, it does a recheck, or the computer goes through itself or something.
Yep.
It does something.
No, there shouldn't be anything too complicated other than that. So,
all right, thank you.
And always remember, disconnect the negative post first.
Yes, I read that.
Yeah,
and they don't want any accessories attached to that negative post because it bypasses the variable voltage control.
Yeah, and the only reason they say disconnect the negative first, it's pretty simple. If you disconnect the and you could disconnect the positive first, but if you disconnect the positive first and you have a wrench on the battery cable and that wrench hits something metal, it's gonna go dead to short. And even if that battery's got some life in it, that wrench is gonna glow red. You know, it's gonna try to run that much current through it. So if you disconnect that negative one first, even if your wrench hits something, it's ground to ground, so there's not gonna be a problem. So you disconnect that, and then now the positive cable isn't connected to anything that's connected to the car anymore. So it's just safer to disconnect the negative first.
Yeah, I tested the cells. There's one dead cell. And all the others are in the white, meaning they need attention. But it's been starting fine, even this cold weather. It's got a good snap to it. But if I ever had a crank over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if it's the original battery in it?
Yes, it is.
So it's 6 years old. It's kind of come to the end of its life.
Right. Yeah. Right. They don't put five-year batteries in those from the factory.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, though. The original batteries are actually pretty good. But one, you know, although the most popular battery that we're changing to AAA right now is 2014 and 2015 Honda CRV batteries. That's the battery that seems to have the shortest life and the ones we're changing most often for whatever reason.
Yeah, I know someone that didn't even get 2 years out of this.
Yeah, but it's and when you go shopping for a battery, if you're going to wherever you're going, Walmart or AutoZone or wherever you go, look at the date on the battery. Try not to take one that's more than 6 months old.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Yeah, because it's funny. I had to buy a little battery for something over the summer, and I looked at it, and the guy handed it to me. It was all covered. It was a little motorcycle battery. And I said to the guy, is this one of these ones you have to mix the acid with? He's like, no, it's all fully charged. I looked at it, and I said, the thing is 2 years old, and they only get 2 years out of these things. And
he goes, dust on it, probably.
Yeah, and I said, I can't expect I'm going to get much life out of this. And he said, it's the only one we have. And I'm like, okay, fine. But
they said the same thing about tires. Tires have a made on date, and people who don't move a lot of tires or if you have an odd size.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if they're stored next to things like heating systems and things that can be a problem. But, yeah, you should be fine. And, again, if they hand you a battery and it's got a date sticker on the side of it and the date sticker is last year, try to find one that's a little bit newer.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure thing, Howie. Take care. Bye-bye. Let's talk to Mike in Hingham. Michael?
Good morning. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Just two quick things. I just came back from last Saturday from the Meekin Museum and auto auction in Las Vegas.
Oh.
And that's something everybody should attend, something like that once in their lifetime. What a blast that was, I'll tell you. You know, got to meet Dana Meekin, but just the amount of cars you can actually go out and see. It was in Las Vegas in the convention hall. You could walk around and look at. And we had some good seats, and they were moving a car every time. One every minute and a half a car was going through, and the time just sped through. If you're a car nut, what a great thing.
Yeah, I've always heard good things about that. There's always a couple things that are, if if there is such a thing as a bucket list, my bucket list is to go out to the SEMA show, the specialty equipment show, and stay for the auctions. And then the other thing I've always wanted to go to is the Consumer Electronics Show, which has turned into a car show now. So
exactly. Yeah. Well, I went for 20 years. You know, I was in that business. Yep. We've talked before. Yep. I mean, electronics business with Harman Kardon, and lastly with Samsung. And exactly, it's a car show. The whole North Hall is nothing but cars
now.
It's amazing. But I just wanted to say that, and also quickly the other one is I was reading my Consumer Reports this month, and I noticed, boy, Volvo just dropped out of this, right to the bottom of the list. Is that Chinese ownership now caused some problems?
No, I think it's general engineering, because I was talking to somebody from Volvo, and he actually used to work for Volvo. He's retired now, and he said the worst thing that ever happened to Volvo was when Ford took them over, because Ford wanted to take their technology and then cut their costs on the assembly side. He said to me, Volvo, the Chinese are leaving Volvo alone. But I think the only thing that's really happening to try to be current, they're trying some new stuff. And I think it's all their new technology they're trying to cram in these cars isn't quite ready for prime time yet. And, you know, especially when you look, I drove a Volvo S60 a couple weeks ago, and what a nice car, except, you know, some of the electronics things were a little bit wonky every once in a while. And I think that's what's really coming to hurt them. The engines run great. The transmissions run great. Things that Volvo is known for, you know, comfortable seats and safety systems and all that sort of stuff. All good things. Just not, you know, I think they're trying a little too hard. And that may be, and it may be a little bit of the new engineers at Volvo, I think, have kind of a free rein to do what they want to do. And that might be actually hurting them a little bit.
Well, we saw that at Mercedes. I mean, Mercedes got knocked for their UI, their user interface and stuff like that, in their cars and such. So it can happen. I mean, one last thing. I'll tell you, if I could go back, and I've owned a lot of cars in my life, and some nice cars. If I could have one car I used to own, would be my 1959 DeSoto Adventure two-door. What a car. It's so big it has its own zip code. Well, listen, happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too.
Wouldn't be a Saturday without listening to your show.
Well, thank you very much. All right. Take care now. Bye-bye. Why don't we take a break, pay some bills? Let's see if we can get a hold of Woody Rogers, see if the switchboard opened up. Although I think they're in a different time zone, so who knows what can happen. Yeah. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. Our phone number is 617-770-3030. We'll be right back. Losing down the street, waving to the girls, peeling out of sight, spending all my money on a Saturday night. Honey, I just wonder what you do there in the back of your pink Cadillac.
1, 2, 3, 4. On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Life I love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get on the road again.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program. Speaking of music, I am surprised you, for one, did not beat me up over my five album picks to be on a desert island with.
I didn't even see it.
You didn't see that?
Yeah. I'm going to have to look it up now.
Well, The radio station that I'm a guest on occasionally up in Maine, they said to me, do your five album picks if you're stuck on a desert island, which at first I said desert island even sounds better, but it was desert island. And I picked five that I just happened to have and tried to make something out of it. But nobody killed me over it. So, but I thought maybe we'll play it afterwards and see what people think. With us on the phone right now is Woody Rogers. Woody Rogers is a product specialist from Tire Rack. And Woody, out here in the Boston area, I'm looking at piles of snow in the parking lot, and I wanted to have you on just to remind people that winter tires are a good idea, right?
Well, they sure are, and you know, we can never forget that it's not a matter of if it will snow, but when, right? Winter will always come, sometimes early, sometimes late.
Yeah, I can't predict lottery numbers or anything like that, but I can predict that between now and late spring, we'll have snow.
Well, exactly, and for the kind of the wide swath of the snow belt, no matter where you are in the country, but even especially where you are there in the Boston area, Thanksgiving to tax time is a good time, a good, you know, kind of range of time to remember for using winter tires. That's when the weather, odds are it's going to be cold enough where winter season tires are really the smart way to go. And we have to remember, these aren't just snow tires like back in the old days where mom and dad put, you know, two tires on the back of the family station wagon. These are winter season tires these days. They're developed for every condition you're going to experience in the cold, wet, dry, slush, ice, snow of from now right on until early April.
Yeah, it really is. And the difference, tell us what, you know, it's funny. I was looking at a 2019 Ram North Edition pickup truck this week at a little intro we did with the New England Motor Press out here. And they pointed out that particular vehicle comes with tires with the snowflake mountain thing on the side of it to say that they are true winter tires, and that's how they come original equipment. What is the difference between that and an all season, you know, even an all season tire that would come on a big pickup truck?
Well, the simplest way to think of it is the all season tire that most of us drive around on all year long are really like a jack of all trades, but it's not. It's the master of none.
Mm-hmm.
A winter season tire is really engineered from the inside out to be optimized to work best during cool to cold temperatures. A big part of how a tire generates traction in any weather condition on any road surface is how the tread rubber conforms to the texture of the surface it's driving over. And if you think of the tread rubber like your favorite candy bar, you know, at room temperature, that candy bar is just the right consistency. It handles great. It tastes great. Yummy, right?
Yep.
You put it in the freezer for an hour, and then you take it out. What happens? You can shatter that candy bar on the counter. And conversely, if you put it on the dash of that nice Ram pickup truck in the middle of the summertime, in just a few minutes of baking in the sun, what's going to happen to it?
I'm going to owe the people at Ram a cleaning.
Well, exactly, right? It's a puddle of goo.
Yeah.
So, you know, the tread rubber works maybe not so dramatically, but it's directionally the same thing. Temperature affects the flexibility of rubber. So the tread compound of a winter tire is really designed to remain flexible and pliable at extremely cold temperatures. But that all-season tire, which has to have characteristics to go from 20 degrees to 120 degrees in Death Valley, say, in the middle of mm-hmm. summertime, it can't have the same focus. And so when it gets down, really as it starts to drop below 40 degrees, passing freezing, and into the 20s and colder, it's getting more rigid and more rigid and more rigid. And pretty soon, it's not pliable enough to really conform to the micro texture of whatever you're driving across.
Mm.
And you have to remember, you know, pavement, we can see the stone that's in the asphalt, you know, under our feet in the parking lot. But even snow has texture, micro texture. Even ice has texture. And that is part of the way every tire works to develop mechanical grip with that surface. The rubber compound in the winter tire is pliable without being soft and gooey.
Yeah.
To give it some grip on that really low, slippery, very limited texture surface of ice and snow.
Yeah. Years ago, we always used to talk about tires and how the tire had siping in it, and the siping was designed to be self-cleaning and remove the snow so the snow didn't constantly build up. And then someone told me just recently that there are tires that are designed to actually hold the snow, and I didn't quite understand what they meant by that.
Exactly, yeah. You know, the traditional thinking, going back to the early 70s when the M+S, or mud and snow designation, was kind of created, it's simply a formula for what the tread pattern should look like. It has nothing to do with how the tire actually will work in those conditions. But back in that era of understanding of how tires develop traction, having a self-cleaning mud tire to get through the farm field or down the dirt road, because there were a lot more dirt roads back then than there are now, you had to have a tire that cleaned out the mud so you could keep taking scoops of it to paddle wheel your way through it.
Mm-hmm.
But snow, or snow and slush and ice, work a little bit differently. A winter tire has affinity for snow and ice. It actually wants to hang on to a little bit of that packed into the tread. And that's one way Sipes develop traction, is they open up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You pack a thin little wedge of snow in each one of those thin slits that are in the middle of your tread block. And now you have the best traction aid you can have in the snow, which is snow-to-snow traction. Think about how making a snowman or a snowball works, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does the snow stick together? There's no glue. You're not adding anything. As you pack it together, it hangs on to itself.
Mm-hmm.
The snow molecules, the ice molecules, actually kind of lock together. And so if the tire can hang on to a little bit of that snow as it revolves at speed, when the tread pattern packed with snow comes back down into the contact patch underneath the tire where it touches the road, it's going to have snow-to-snow traction packing onto itself. It's just one of the many ways a winter tire can do a better job of hanging onto the snow. An all-season tire just doesn't hold on to snow the same way, because if it did, then it wouldn't work well in the heat of the summer.
Right. Yeah. So like you said, the all-season tire is sort of a one-size-fits-most, I guess. It can work
yep.
for a lot of us. But if you're somebody who has to be out before the snow plows in the morning, you want to get real winter tires.
For sure. You know, and you'll be able to dig your way through, get through the snow drift. If they just plowed the main roads, you got to get out of your neighborhood, climb up the driveway. But the other, even bigger area where winter tires have a real advantage over even the best all-season tires is ice traction. And when the grip level is the lowest, that differential is the greatest of dedicated winter tires. So if you're in an area that has high traffic, those icy intersections on the way home from work, or if you tend to get more icing conditions than deep snowfall up in the mountains conditions, a winter tire really pays a big dividend on the ice as well.
Yeah, winter tires are really the answer for a lot of people. Although Dennis, my executive producer, pointed out, okay, if I put four winter tires on my car, where do I put the old ones? I don't have any space to store them anywhere.
You know, that can be somewhat true, but if you think of the dimensions of a stack of winter tires, for anything smaller than that big Ram pickup truck you're talking about, it's like a rectangle 26 by 26 by 30.
Mm.
So
yeah,
it's no bigger.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. It's no bigger than the couple of tubs worth of stuff I have left over from college and high school, you know, that I keep in the corner of my basement that I just can't get rid of.
Yeah.
It's about the same size as the stack of winter tires I have.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Or, you know, somebody, it's the size of a, you know, wash machine or something. If they're bigger tires.
Yeah.
Yeah, even less.
It's
yeah.
smaller than your trash can.
Yeah. A couple of questions that came up this week that I was kind of saving for you. Somebody said to me they had a, I think it was a relatively new car, Honda Odyssey or something, and they said they got a nail in the tire. They inflated the tire. They brought it to a tire store. It was repaired, but now they're going on a cross-country trip, and they're concerned about the repair and whether that tire is repaired. Is it as good as new? And it really depends on the repair technique, right?
It really does. Hopefully the technician dismounted the tire from the wheel so it could be inspected inside and out for any signs of damage or stress while it was low on air. Driving on a tire severely underinflated will ruin it,
mm-hmm.
and you may not be able to see that from the outside, but it's much more obvious to see once you look at the inside of the tire off the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's the only way off the wheel is the only way you can do a proper repair, because it's not just a plug through the hole, but you also need a patch on the inside to make sure no air will escape or moisture can penetrate through the tire. So to know if it's good for that cross-country trip, you have to have confidence
yep.
or understanding of what the technician did.
Well, hopefully, they said they went to a tire store, so hopefully they do the right thing. So,
I hope so.
Yeah, and the second question came up, and I actually sort of learned a little bit of the answer on the Tire Rack website, was You know, somebody said they had a late model Subaru. It had about 45,000 miles on it. They got a nail in one tire, but the tire was the nail was in such a place that it couldn't be repaired. So they had to replace the tire. And the place they went to said, "You really, you know, in this particular car, the best recommendation is to have four tires that all have even tread." And then they wrote to me kind of after the fact and said, "Did we really need to buy four tires?"
No is the answer, because of exactly what you stumbled across. Many all-wheel drive vehicles, in the owner's manual, it will give you guidance on how close in tread depth all four tires must mm-hmm. be. Subaru and Audi are two that have a very specific recommendation that the tread depth be the same or very similar around all four tires.
Mm-hmm.
So Tire Rack is one of the few places that offers a tire shaving surface where you can buy one brand new that matches and then have it shaved down to match the tread depth of the other three. Sure, you're taking a little bit of mileage off that one brand new tire, but it's a lot less expensive to buy one plus shaving than to buy all four brand new.
Right. And I remember shaving tires back a bunch of years ago almost for racing purposes. But I didn't even think of that today, that's actually a really interesting alternative to going out and buying four tires. So
Exactly. And the equipment we use is we got years ago, decades ago, four racing tires to shave them down to go faster on the racetrack. And then as all-wheel drive vehicles have become much more popular, we discovered that it's the same great equipment that can have this great service for consumers.
Yeah, no, it's a great thing. And and the other question isn't really a question. There are very, just like there's winter tire designations, there are also sort of summer tires. And a couple of years ago, I was driving an Audi A6, and it was in the car test fleet, and it was here in the winter time, although at the time it was winter only in temperature, and I think we had a period of sub 20 degree weather and no snow on the ground, and that car was awful in that temperature. Just for everything you talked about, those tires yep. aren't designed to be in temperatures under 45 degrees, right?
Exactly. And, you know, every summer, the summer tires are really three-season tires. They're just not meant for anything below around low 40s mm-hmm. and somewhere below. Every tire will transition to become more plastic-like. And so the grip level, it feels skittish, slips and slides. Heaven forbid if you're at 33 degrees and raining or it begins to turn to slush. Those summer tires would become diabolical in that kind of weather because they're just not compounded for that temperature range. Just like the true winter tire isn't meant to be at 95 degrees on a hot summer day. Neither work well at those extremes.
Yeah, it really does make a difference. And to the point where the car was almost scary to drive because of the tires that were on it.
It just feels, like unsure-footed, right? You kind of feel skittish or disconnected from the road. You can feel those tiny little slips and slides that it's doing because the rubber just isn't gripping the road surface as you turn. Even in cold, dry conditions, it can feel slippery, which is probably what you were experiencing.
Right. Yeah. Your coworker Matt Edmonds has been on the program before, and he said to me one time, you know, and he attributed it to me, and I think I attributed it to him, but he said, you know, when you think about tires, it is the only part of your car that actually touches the ground, so you have to make sure that they're in good shape.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, nowadays, more and more vehicles are packed with more and more safety technology. Adaptive braking, you know, automatic panic stop, lane guidance, stability control, traction control, even the good old ABS. And all of those systems rely on the traction that the tire can provide. They don't manufacture traction. They can't change the laws of physics. It's up to the tire to be able to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
It's the link in the chain that connects the vehicle and those systems to the road.
Yep.
And so by optimizing the traction your tires have, and that means winter tires in winter season, something else the rest of the year, you can really optimize those systems you invested in when you bought your vehicle.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. It absolutely makes sense. Dennis, did you have a question?
Well, a caller had a question.
Okay.
And our phone system doesn't allow us to do the bridge calling thing. So the question is, he got brand new tires, and after he got them installed, he noticed in the paperwork the manufacturer recommended high valves.
High pressure valve stems?
No, not high pressure valve stems. Heavy duty valves. Something like that, yeah.
What, heavy duty valves. What's on the heavy?
It wasn't. Yeah. I guess. Is there a way to
a metal valve stem? Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. That's
metal valve.
So, is there a way? I guess the kid didn't. The kid installing the tires didn't even know how to take off the spare from his car, so his vehicle. So he's just concerned. Is there a way to inspect the valves to make sure they're the correct valves?
Did the caller mention what kind of vehicle he has?
He did not. I didn't get that information. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. I mean, it sounds like they were pickup truck tires, and not just a standard like half ton pickup, but like a heavy duty, a three quarter or one ton truck tire vehicle. The tires that use very high inflation pressure to help the tire carry all the load of the vehicle and its cargo. So those vehicles need heavy-duty or higher-pressure valve stems than the standard stems on, like, a Toyota Camry. The best way to check for that would be... Oh, boy.
I have an idea. Just put metal valve stems in and end all the suspicions, right?
Well, that would certainly solve it, but if it's a newer vehicle with tire pressure monitoring sensors, that could be a problem. Yeah. But... I can't tell you as a civilian what to look for. Simply, there's no single clue.
Yeah,
The tire shop should be able to tell you.
Yeah, no, I think that's the difference between sometimes going to, the corner garage that maybe could fix every check engine light under the sun, but sometimes tire service requires a professional, and whether it's one of our major sponsors on this program is Sullivan Tire, a tire company that has been around since the mid 50s and provides great service, or whether they buy tires and wheels or tires directly from you folks and have them shipped out, you're getting the right combination of stuff together.
Exactly. It is important, every link in the chain in buying tires for your vehicle, it's important you use a reliable, credible source to get those installed. I did think of one clue they can look for on those high pressure valve stems. Look for a ring of brass between the rubber or at the end of the rubber portion of the stem when the cap is on. And if you only see rubber or black, then they are low pressure stems. But if you can see this little ring of brass visible towards the tip of the valve stem with the cap still installed, then you have a high-pressure valve stem.
Oh, okay. So we all learned something. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your website is pretty simple, right?
It is. We like simple, right? It's TireRack.com. And in addition to the ability to buy tires and wheels or research what works for you, we also have lots of great tech articles in the research section of our site to learn more about the tires and how they fit with your vehicle.
Yeah, somebody I know had a vehicle that I think it was some Chrysler product, and the wheels were just corroded with age, and they looked at replacing the wheels, and they said, you know what, they went on your site, they found wheels that looked very similar to the ones they had. Sure enough, a short time later, four wheels, four tires showed up. They installed them themselves. They're all pre-balanced, ready to go, and they were happy and didn't have to deal with it. And they ended up selling their wheels and tires to someone else afterwards. So it worked out good.
Yeah, even if it's, for winter tires, buying wheels to go with them, so it's just a simple change-out process in your driveway, is a very common practice. Mm. But just like that that person, we have lots of wheels that people will buy for their summertime or non-winter set or their year-round set. Lots of great wheel options for style or just practicality, from simple steel to high fashion, whatever you want.
And how does it work? We'll use somebody that has a typical car, Toyota Camry, Honda Accord, tire pressure monitor system in it. you know, there was a time where you could say, well, okay, I'll deal with the tire pressure light being on. I'll put on a set of four wheels and tires. But really the best thing, though, is to have a second set of tire pressure monitors, right?
Exactly. And, you know, thankfully, like a lot of things, with volume, the prices of those sensors or an extra set is coming down, down, down. In a lot of cases, it's $30 or $40 per wheel, which may sound like a lot, but having that warning device working on the car makes a lot of sense. You know, it's there for good reason.
Yep.
And, you know, unless you are one of those obsessive car owners that's checking tire pressure faithfully, having that safety net sure is a good warning. I mean, I'm a tire guy. I check my tires all the time. And I got a nail in a tire a couple of weeks ago that I didn't see in my normal walk around the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And on a Sunday afternoon, my tire pressure warning light came on. And if I didn't have sensors installed, I wouldn't know it. And then I would drive on that tire until it's so low that it fails. But with the warning light, I could catch the problem early. I could add some air. I inspected the tire. It was able to be repaired properly, and I continue to use that tire today.
And you know that tire would go flat on the way to the airport when you're running late, right?
Of course. It always works that way, you know. And you miss the flight. You miss your daughter's wedding, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, flat tires are always inconvenient. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely. Hey, Woody, thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday morning to join us up here in Boston. And next time you're up this way, bring a shovel.
Well, you're very, very welcome, and yeah, I'll do that because it's snowing here as well.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Bye now.
That was Woody Rogers. He is a product specialist at Tire Rack. Tire Rack, a great place to, you know, even if you buy your tires locally, if you decide you're going to go to Sullivan Tire, which is a fantastic place to go, and you want to go there, you know, can you go do a little bit of research on their website? Yeah, I do it all the time. Tire Rack is a great place to find information. That's where I found out that you could shave some tread off a tire on cars that are very fussy, like what he said, Audis are like that, some Volvos are like that, and they want the tire tread to be within, in some cases, a quarter of an inch. And a quarter of an inch is a fair amount of tread, but if you're going out and you're having to spend $180 per tire, and you can spend $180 and spend a little bit more to have the tire shaved down, and that all of a sudden now you're buying one, it matches, it's perfect, you're good to go. Same tread. Saves yourself some money. To me, it all works out. Why don't we take another break? Pay some bills. If you would like to join us, our phone number is 617-770-3030. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Toyota Yaris. And maybe, just to make Dennis happy, give away a couple tickets to the Boston Auto Show. Yeah, he's starting to get used to it now. He looks at me like, yeah, whatever. It's all good. We'll be right back.
5 o'clock Friday blows, I got to let it go.
Welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. I was saying that I was asked to provide my five favorite albums for a desert island, and I don't know if you can hear this or not, but we'll give it a try.
AAA's Car Doctor, and I've been asked to provide my five favorite albums if I was stuck on a desert island. Well, here they are. Starting off with Fleetwood Mac. Everybody loves Fleetwood Mac, and so do I. For a little bit of nostalgia, the Rat Pack. Who doesn't like these guys? Really, Sammy, Frank, Dean. Perfect. A little bit of my Irish heritage, the Saw Doctors. Some great Irish music. And then for something completely different, the soundtrack to Pirate Radio. A good variety of music. And finally, if I'm on a desert island, should be Jimmy Buffett, Take the Weather With You. Good way to finish it off. So I think I'd be okay. I just need to figure out how to patch that hole in the boat.
I turned 21 down there.
Jenna McKinney, director of...
That was it. But I thought the real music people would say to me, your music is awful. But,
well...
Yeah, so...
Well. I missed the first one. What was the first one?
Fleetwood Mac.
Fleetwood Mac. You can't go wrong with Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a metalhead, but Fleetwood Mac is timeless. Then you said the Saw Doctors?
Yeah.
I like the Saw Doctors.
Okay. All right. All right.
I've not heard the soundtrack to Pirate Radio.
It's just, it's like listening to the radio. It's
right.
just, it's 40 songs. So,
I mean, I saw the movie. The movie was great. The soundtrack in that was great.
Yeah. So,
and then what was it?
Jimmy Buffett, which people hate, you know.
He's hit or miss with me. Yeah. And then there was one more, wasn't there?
The Rat Pack.
I don't know who they are.
You don't. Dean Martin.
Oh, those, Dean that Martin, Rat Pack. Yeah.
Dean
that
Martin and Frank Sinatra.
I mean, those are timeless. That's timeless.
Yeah,
but
yeah. I just, you know. Yeah,
I'm not going to argue too much with those.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay, fine. But I was just, you know, the people that actually picked the music, one of the people won a Grammy.
Okay.
The other person was some award-winning author.
Hey.
And then they stuck me in there somewhere. So
see, you're respected.
Yeah, I don't know. They stuck me in there, so I was happy. I want to talk about the car that got me around, which was the Toyota Yaris. It's a subcompact hatchback comes in two or four-door configurations. The Yaris is powered by a 1.5-liter four-cylinder engine connected to a five-speed manual transmission or a conventional automatic transmission. There's three trim levels, L, LE, and the subject of my road test, the four-door SE with an automatic transmission. The Yaris is not exactly a hot rod, no, but the 1.5-liter 106 horsepower. When was the last time you heard of a 106 horsepower engine? Seemed more than adequate for around-town driving. The four-speed automatic transmission sounds a bit dated when compared to more advanced 8, 9, and even 10. 10-speed transmission, but manages to get the job done. Out on the highway, driving the Yaris isn't challenging, but you do need to be aware of the limitations of the Yaris's engine. Passing a slow-moving tractor trailer or even merging onto a fast-moving highway needs a bit of thought. When pushing the Yaris, the engine does get a little bit noisy, but never overly objectionable. Fuel economy isn't a class leader, but it's still quite good. With my time behind the wheel of the Yaris averaging 34 miles per gallon, the ride is what you'd expect from a subcompact, a bit choppy over bumps, but the Yaris never gets unsettled. The handling, on the other hand, is actually quite good, as is the overall maneuverability. Driving around tight city streets is where the Yaris performs best. The light, quick steering and tight turn radius make the Yaris fun and easy to drive. Safety items is where the Yaris stands out from the competition. Our Yaris had automatic high beam headlights, lane departure warning, front collision warning, automatic emergency braking, and 9 airbags. In addition, the headlights on our Yaris were projector style, which did a good job of illuminating some dark country roads I was on. The LED daytime running lights added to the safety system by offering additional visibility. The cloth front seats were comfortable, and at 6 feet tall, there was plenty of head and leg room. The 60-40 split rear seat is a bit tight for adults, but is comfortable enough, at least for short trips. Cargo area behind the rear seat of this little hatchback is about 15.5 cubic feet, and with the rear seat folded, can accommodate larger, bulkier items. The controls are very straightforward, simple knobs, buttons. I like that, instead of distracting touchscreens, which too many vehicles have. The Yaris is a pretty good car that gets good fuel economy and has a low starting price of $15,363. Is it the best subcompact on the market? No, but it does offer good value. If your priority is fuel economy, dependability, maneuverability over sportiness, the Yaris is a good choice. And why is it not the best? Well, there are some that handle better, but you pay a lot more for them. So combine it all together, the sum of the parts make it worthwhile. Fuel economy, 30 city, 35 highway. And our car with everything in it, I don't think you could put another option in it, just about $20,000. So pretty good price. Paul Sullivan is waving to me, but I can see him out of the corner of my eye.
Well, it's funny. It's serendipitous, actually. Paul and Sarah are up with Zachary for the Thanksgiving weekend. And Sarah's had a Yaris for 5 or 6 years. And we were just talking about it yesterday because it has a lot of miles on it. It probably needs to be, but she loves it.
Yeah.
And so to hear that she can get one for $15,000, she might be
She might want the $20,000 one.
I'll give her the $5,000.
There you go. What a guy.
I said that on the radio, didn't I?
You did, yeah.
All right, bye.
All right. let's talk to Robert in Tingsboro. Robert.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
No one got hurt. So it's always good when that happens, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, you were talking about tire shaving or lathes. I didn't know they still did that. I had it done over 50 years ago one time at a Cadillac dealer, but I figured it was an unsafe practice. But
I don't know what the word I'm looking for. It's a pretty scary looking process that looks like equipment from the Middle Ages. But back then, the reason they shaved tires back then was half the time the tires were out of round.
Oh yeah, I had a couple that were egg shaped.
Yep.
They did it on the car, drum, wheel, tire, whole thing.
And oh, okay.
Nice balance job. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
But there was a little, probably like the width of the contact patch.
Yeah.
I was almost bald in that spot because it was so bad.
The rest of the tire was good.
Yeah.
No, they used to shave. They used to shave big truck tires too. Which I worked in a shop that was also a truck tire shop, and I saw this piece of equipment that looked like it was out of a big metal fab shop, and I'm like, what the heck is that thing? And they said, oh, we use that to shave tires. I'm like, when was the last time you did that? And I don't think it was ever used while I was there. But yeah, it's interesting that they sort of resurrected this, and it's not a bad idea, especially where tires today are much rounder than they've ever been. And if you have, you know, I'm looking out in the parking lot right now. There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 all-wheel drive vehicles out here, and any one of them is best off when you can replace all four tires as a set, because it puts a lot less stress on the transfer case of the vehicle. So even cars like Volvo will say, the Volvos with all-wheel drive, they say something a little backwards, but they say if those cars are primarily front-wheel drive, and what they'll say is if you have to replace one tire, take the two matching tires, put those on the front, take the one new tire and the one old tire and put it on the back, and that way you're going to put less stress on the transfer case, because 90% of the time it's going to be front-wheel drive anyway, so you're not going to notice. So,
right.
But on that rare occasion where that does happen, if you can't afford to put four tires on it, they'll say, well, do that. That will be the least stressful way for the transfer case. And it's even the same thing if you have a front-wheel drive car and you put a Space Saver spare tire on, you put one little tire and one big tire on the front, it can affect the how the transmission works and the gearing inside the differential. So yeah, having a choice, and again, I never even thought about this until I happened to be on Tire Rack's website and said, huh, they can sell you a shaved tire. That's an interesting idea.
So they're the only ones that do it then?
I'm willing to bet there's somebody out there with the equipment, but I have never – it's been so long ago, I would have never even thought about it. But certainly it's something I ask about. And then the person who wrote to me, their car had – now that I think about it, their car had about 50,000 miles on it. They bought it used with 22,000 miles on it, and they put 30,000 on it. Chances are they were the original tires, and putting four new tires on a car with 50,000 miles on it is probably money really well spent. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, you mentioned those truck tires. They don't balance those, so being round and well balanced by themselves is critical. You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean the closest I've ever seen anybody to balance a truck tire is if it's so far off that it has a heavy spot at the bottom of it, I've seen them actually break them down and spin them around a little bit to try to get them a little bit better. But, not a whole lot.
Yeah, you don't know of any place in Massachusetts that does that, though.
I would, you know, if I was looking for somebody, I'd call a big tire store like Sullivan Tire that's been around. It's been around as long as I have. They've been around since 1955. If anybody has tire shaving equipment, I bet they do.
Yeah, probably one of their original locations.
Yeah,
I'd thought about it. I just figured it was probably something that was come and gone now.
Yeah, no. I'd check it out and see what they have. But yeah, it's important to make sure that the tires on an all-wheel drive car. You know, probably the most liberal, I think, when I was looking it up, might have been Subaru, which did allow for up to I think it was up to 3/8 inch difference between the front and rear or left to right. And still 3/8 inch, you know, if you have a tire that's, it doesn't sound like much, but that's the overall circumference. And that's not really a lot.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And briefly, you mentioned manual transmissions and how you still enjoy them. Yeah, as do I. But they're so hard to find nowadays.
Yeah.
They don't make them on any half-ton pickups anymore.
No, no. And even
cars,
yeah. Yeah, somebody wrote to me a week or two ago and said they really like driving a standard shift car. They were looking for one, and I recommended the Kia Soul because it has a standard shift available, and they were looking for something like a little SUV type of vehicle. And the problem is they were also looking for a few more bells and whistles, like some of the new technology. And the problem is the Kia Soul in the base model comes with a stick, but it doesn't come with something even like cruise control. So they're like, yeah, I don't really want the most basic model, so that's not going to work out. So unfortunately, that's sometimes the way they mix them together. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, even I drove a BMW M5 this year, you know, a $100,000 sports sedan, always was available in a standard shift. This year, only available in an automatic because no one was buying the stick shift.
Yeah, it's getting sad. People are getting lazy.
Well,
that left foot definitely wants something to do. You know?
Yeah, you know, they probably said that when every car had power steering, you know?
Yeah, it took me a while to buy that too. But
there you go.
That's another story.
All right.
Okay, John.
Okay,
have
take care.
Day.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye.
617-770-3030, 617-770-3030 is the number.
So I learned how to drive on a standard.
You did.
I had standards for a long time until I had to drive from Medford to Randolph and back again.
And you wanted to cut your leg off by the time you were done. Yeah.
Yes, during the height of rush hour traffic both ways, and never, ever again will I intentionally get a standard. I will drive one if my buddy has one and they want me to, hey, you know how to drive one, why don't you tool around in this for a little while? Yeah, I'll absolutely do that. But as far as day-to-day driving...
If I had to drive in and out of, for living on the South Shore, if I had to drive in and out of Boston every day in stop-and-go expressway traffic, the last car I would want is a standard shift. And I have always said there are two things that I love and hate. I love to drive and I hate to drive. And on a twisty two-lane road with a sporty car, with a standard shift, on a nice fall afternoon,
nothing
can be better. Stuck in Boston traffic to go 9 miles that takes an hour and a half, it ain't no fun.
Not at all.
My favorite part was putting it in neutral going down the big hills. It was like a free fall.
Okay. Speaking of which, you just came up with a trivia question.
Okay, good.
You don't know you did, but you just came up with a trivia question.
All right. What's the prize?
Some kind of book.
What's the prize for the inventor of the trivia question?
A hearty thank you.
Thank you. A laurel and hearty thank you.
Yes, that too. Putting your truck in neutral and coasting has some terminology behind it. What is the term? And it's used in a popular song. What is the term?
I know it.
You do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you can't guess.
I know.
Yeah. But what is the term for that type of, I'll give you a little hint, for that type of overdrive? If you know the answer, give us a call at 617-770-3030, and we will send you a book. I have to move my office space, so I've been going through, and I never throw away books. I always save them. I do something with them. I don't read books either. Yeah. I look at pictures in the books, but I typically will, try to give them out to people who enjoy them, and even sometimes some that are not auto-related that somehow – I got one the other day that was one of the books for dummies, so I think they were picking me directly. So they may have been doing that. But it was How to Eat Local for Dummies.
How to Eat Local for Dummies?
Yeah.
So, did you know all of the places?
No, it was kind of generic. It was
well,
sort
yeah,
of
it
like,
would have
yeah,
to be. I would
yeah,
guess,
it was
yeah.
sort of like, you know, here's how you find the best local joints to go eat kind of place.
Do you remember
and,
anything about it? How do you go about doing that? I'd like to know that.
A lot of it's common sense. It's like talk to your yeah. friends and, yeah. you know, don't, you know, if you drive by and there's no cars in the parking lot, probably not the best place
to go.
If
you recognize the logo, keep driving. Yeah, yeah, that kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. So yeah. it was sort of that way. And and so I looked at it and I said, you know, I'm never really going to read this. And I brought it down to our little lunchroom and I left it there and it was gone in seconds. Mm-hmm. So I felt good. Somebody took it.
Did you like put a little post-it note on saying
said,
this is yours?
Take,
you...
Please take me.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
which is what I usually do. The other thing is, although I had one that had to do with a some kind of mystery that took place in. Out your way in Blackstone, there's some cavern sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it was some mystery that was written locally about that. Couldn't give that book away to save my life.
Was it that, what do they call it when you fund your own publishing? Self-published.
Yeah, it was actually, and it was a Massachusetts based book. So I expected it to be sort of interesting and
yeah,
and it wasn't apparently nobody wanted it.
Well, you got phone calls. I
kept moving it around. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, if you put a sandwich in the refrigerator, it'll be gone.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah. Maybe I should have put a sandwich and a book in a bag and left it in there. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Something like that. But no, I always try to peek because I know especially automotive people love anything automotive related for the most part. And if you have room for it, I would just as soon give it to you. Okay. Well, so we'll kind of go in order. What? You're just laughing like, just take the calls. I can't help it. All of a sudden I have two co-hosts. I don't know what to do with myself.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. That's okay.
I'm off the clock.
I like it. Yeah, you're not even, you don't get paid for like another 8 minutes. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Let's start with let's go in order here. Let's start with Ken in Topsfield.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I was hoping to call and win tickets for the auto show, but I'll take a free.
Well, you might get tickets for the auto show too.
Well, I'd rather that, but I don't even know if I'm right. I'm not a truck man. But I'm thinking of the old 18-wheelers. Is it freewheeling?
No, it's not, but stay on hold anyway because we'll give you a pair of tickets to the auto show. How's that?
You're the best.
Well, there's better people than me, but that's okay. But you stay right there and we'll do what we can for you, okay?
And I'll learn about when you put the thing in neutral.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Let's see, where are we going now? While I'm doing this,
we don't have time.
We have plenty of time. By the way, it was the, I was trying to figure out who it was that actually sang that song. Let's go to line three. Richard?
Yes. Georgia Overdrive.
You are correct.
Very good.
How do you know that? How do you know that?
There's a song. I got something, something, something in a Georgia Overdrive, 6 days on the road. And
that's
I'm
right.
Gonna make it.
That's right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
And it's a guy from Maine. The guy from up in Maine, Curtis.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
No, the guy that sang the song, I believe, is from Maine. But anyway, irregardless. But I knew it was a Georgia Overdrive.
Yeah, it's Georgia. And I never knew what that was. I have to admit, I heard the lyric over and over again. And somebody, I said, I don't even know what that is. And somebody said, oh, that's when you're in your 18-wheeler and you put it in neutral and you just keep rolling, which interestingly enough is illegal in some places.
It really should be.
And I don't know how they know that you're doing that, but... But I guess
that's the question.
But I guess
probably the smoke coming out of the diesel. I have no idea. I'm not. I've never. It's been 50 years since I drove a truck.
Well, it probably wouldn't be as much fun anymore. So
no, it wouldn't be. I was delivering furniture for Jordan Marsh Company back in those days. But anyway, all right.
As long as you weren't delivering muffins, because you know the blueberry muffins were pretty good.
I just had some this past a couple of days ago. I went over to Jordan's Furniture in
Avon, and got some of the George Marsh muffins?
I did, and they're delicious.
And they're still really good. Okay. All right. Anyway, stay right there. Dennis will take down your name and address, and we'll send you out something.
Tickets to the auto show would be fantastic.
I'll do that. I'll do that too.
Okay.
Thank you very much. All right. Good enough. Thank you. So we made a couple people happy. We gave them tickets to the auto show. Let's see. We ought to turn your microphone back on.
Back on.
Yeah. See, I only know how to do just a few things around here, but I know which button's yours.
It's so good. You're within arm.
Yeah, I think I just dislocated my shoulder, but yeah. I just wanted to bring this up. If you're thinking about buying a car that is certified pre-owned, and certified pre-owned it typically has a better warranty than just a plain used car, and these are the top 10 certified pre-owned cars from the website iccars.com, which, by the way, you can read the Car Doctor question and answer column on their website.
You're a very underrated writer. I've told you that before.
Yeah, well, I told you what I know about writing.
Well, you should write a book that nobody wants.
I sat with a woman one time who was an adjunct professor at Boston University, and I said to her, what can you teach me about writing? And she said, buy me a drink. And I said, okay. And within the time frame that it took to drink that drink, she told me everything I needed to know.
Okay.
Start with the big letter, end with a period, put a comma where you take a breath. Don't use words you don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And once you turn it in, it's not yours anymore.
Okay.
And she also said, get your expense reports in early if you happen to be somebody who does that. So,
but you actually get paid to write.
Yeah, I guess.
So you're a professional writer.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, back to the story.
All right, go ahead.
So if you want to buy a certified pre-owned car, you want to save the most amount of money and get the most value, Jeep Wrangler Unlimited, 1.6% premium over the typical Jeep that's not certified pre-owned. Number two, Nissan Rogue. Number three, Honda CR-V. Only about $340 more, and you can get a certified pre-owned car. Chevy Tahoe, about $700 more. Silverado, about $500. Honda Accord, about $300 more. Honda Civic, about $300 more. Jeep Grand Cherokee, about $560 more. And the GMC Sierra 1500, about $650 more. And that's how you can get sort of the top of the used car market for the least amount of money. So it saves you a little bit of money.
You know what I just realized when you were reading all those models and cars? I've never owned a car that I didn't love.
Really?
Yeah. I'm probably unique in that because most people, you know, there's at least one clunker in the
the
list.
Yeah.
But no, all the cars that I've ever owned, I love.
Well, okay. That's good. Before the music plays, I'm not ready yet.
Well, the time is
no. He can have whatever he needs. It's Thanksgiving weekend.
I used your Twitter page.
Oh,
this
you did
week, 66
my 66 moons?
Moons.
Yeah,
and I used it when I was talking to my 4-year old second cousin. I don't know what she'd be. I don't know something.
Well, so you are one of my three.
My nephew's kid, and she was all upset about something.
Okay,
and I said to her, you don't have to be upset. She says, why is that? I said, because you're 4.
Yeah.
I said, at 4, you can do anything.
Right.
You can do nothing, or you can do anything.
You have a license.
You have a license to do whatever you want.
Well, I said,
if you don't want to play with, you don't want to go out and dance in the living room with your sister, which is what the whole argument was over in. They'd been up for like 12 hours, so that was part of the problem.
Yep.
I said, you don't have to. And she's like, I don't have to? I said, no, you don't.
No.
And I said, and says it right here, almost.
Right.
I kind of had to reword one of your tweets, but
yeah.
But no, you need to do that more, and you need to get more following on that Twitter page because you put some very profound things down.
Well, I mean, you can't be around kids of that age for a quarter of a century and not learn a few things.
Yeah.
So when I get the inspiration to do it, I will. It's talking about writing. Someone said I should write a book, and I'm not a bad writer. And I'm going to have more time on my hands as I get a little bit
older.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the framework. I want to use that.
Yeah.
and see if I can do something with
one
it.
One of my favorite tweets was who could talk first or whatever it was, and it was like Michelle Obama.
Oh, yeah. You know who could read first.
Oh, who could read first.
Yeah, it was like Stephen Hawking.
And your answer was, who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah.
It's a race.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. Okay, that's the end. All right. Coming up next, Paul Sullivan.
Promotion, 66 Moons.
66 Moons on Twitter. Paul Sullivan and the Irish Hit Parade, the very best in Irish music, coming up next. And remember, one of my picks if I was stuck on a desert island was Saw Doctor. So maybe Paul will play a Saw Doctor song.
Identify what album. It said what album would you. There's no album called
Saw. I held that up.
Songs from Sun Street.
Yeah, it could have been that one. Yeah. Till next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye bye.
It's that time of year again.